In this episode, we'll be talking to Christina Disler, founder of Asta and WorkLab. Christina started her entrepreneurial journey in her home country, Canada, where she set up one of Vancouver's early co-working spaces in 2016. In 2019, she won the prestigious Women's Entrepreneurship Fund. Christina is now working on her next venture, Asta, an AI-powered people analytics platform. Today's episode is part of a short series on failure. Failure is a natural part of life, and each and every one of us will experience failure to varying degrees. How we process and learn from it will prepare us for challenges in the future. Welcome, Christina, to the very first episode of She Founds. Christina, I'd love to hand it over to you, and you can just give us a little bit more detail about your journey.
Firstly, thank you for having me today. It's such an honor to be the first on the podcast. That's really exciting. I started my career in HR. I always was passionate about people and human behavior. At university, I loved business class, but I also loved psychology because the question of why do we do the things we do was something that always created such interest for me. I had such curiosity around trying to always seeking that why. I ended up in HR in a pretty toxic work environment, a male-dominated company and industry. During that time, I actually experienced sexual harassment for a few years while being there. I remember thinking, okay, this is an extreme example with this harassment situation where the police ended up getting involved. But I was thinking every day that I come into work, I don't feel it's really safe to be me. This is a unique scenario with the conditions that I was dealing with, but many people do walk into their workplace and feel they need to disconnect from themselves. What is that doing to the work we're doing, the work we're creating and putting out into the world? I really felt that. I felt the company wasn't getting my best work. What I ended up doing was I left after an acquisition happened. I was going to stay on and I didn't want to work for a 15,000 person company. I decided to do my own thing, and my family was in the commercial real estate sector. So I had this HR background, new commercial real estate, ended up starting the number 6 in Vancouver co-working space. But my entire mission and ethos was around this principle of what would it look like to create a work environment that instead of armoring up when we walk in those front doors of the office, but rather taking off the armor and actually being able to feel like when we walk in those front doors, we feel we're at home. What would that do for the entrepreneur and the small business owner? This would have been 2015. We're at a time where really toxic work culture was being glorified. As you know, Vancouver is in the west coast of Canada, which is right above Silicon Valley, and we have a big tech industry there. And we saw this a lot in Silicon Valley, this celebration of over-caffeination and no sleep and toxic norms around work. And so we wanted to be the antithesis of that. I was super passionate about building that into a co-working model, which I still own today. I live in London, but I still am involved at a very high level strategic lens. And I continued to build. We built one space, we built into a second space, and we built a much bigger studio where we did classes and different experiences that really supported the worker at work. After that, built a publication that brought me to London. I was interviewing people. It was called The Work, W-E-R-K. And then COVID hit. I can only say that the business of bringing people together in space really had a huge struggle through the experience of the pandemic, and we had to shut down our publication and really just focus on trying to survive from the co-working side of things. We had such a great response to The Work and huge audience and readership across the world with no ad spend, and we just were onto something. So initially, I started on the path of, okay, I want to build this out actually for corporates. I want to build a content platform with resources that supports the holistic well-being of the individual and really build a product that was sold into tech companies through the discovery phase. And I took a good amount of time to do that. I ended up pivoting. And now we have Aster, which is an AI-powered culture diagnostics platform that really supports diagnosing culture and employment issues before they become retention issues. We like to think of ourselves as the advocate for the employee experience, but we're also the partner for the employer, because there is just a lack of transparency for so many reasons into what's going on for the people. That kind of brings us to today, the whole journey and path from day one of my working career.
Thank you so much for sharing that and also being so transparent about your experience. I love how you've taken an area that you love and you've turned it into a entrepreneurship journey, but also how you've channeled quite a negative experience and you are now trying to change work cultures everywhere at scale through your current company. Can you tell me a little bit about your process of taking something that was quite a negative setback and doing something very positive like you are now?
So interesting that you say that, because it took me so long to actually reflect back to figure out why did I do the things I did? Why did I start Work Lab? Or finding, again, that common thread that I speak to. I wasn't actually really aware I was doing it at the time. I really was trusting my gut. I was listening into my intuition of, wait, but I want to create a work environment that feels like home. It was a few years later that I thought, oh, this is why, because that's what I experienced for so long. I knew that it was wrong, and I knew that it was impacting my ability to innovate and be creative and connect with my colleagues. It was only much further down the line that I was able to look back and be like, oh, there is cohesion here. This isn't random that I went from HR to co-working to tech. It's that bigger why that I do encourage people to take the time to just explore. And really, I think we often will try to do our mission, vision, values work in a boardroom in one workshop, and that it's an output. And actually, especially as a founder, it's probably going to just be, what are your personal core values? Where do you get triggered? Where do you feel righteous? You want to argue a point because you so strongly believe in it, because it's probably rocking a core value of yours. And that could be with a friendship. And yet it probably, if you explore that more and take that as an opportunity to learn, that probably is a value that will end up being the value of your business. So I do feel, being in my mid-20s is when I started, left my career as an employee and went into entrepreneurship. And I'd say that also through maturing and aging and getting to know myself as a woman, I think I've been able to sift through some of that stuff just with maturation as well. And that constant inquiry, you never are going to fully arrive somewhere. It is a constant journey, but you have to have the courage to ask those questions and know that we don't stay static. And if we do have a strong anchor and a strong sense of self, all the outside things can change and adapt. And I think of even the context of the pandemic, you saw that in companies, that the companies that really had a strong purpose and they really strongly knew what they stood for, they were able to adapt the services they provided or the way they did business, because that was the how. But as long as their why, and they were super still clear on that why, all of that can transform and change with so much greater ease than being really holding on to what we do and how we do it, and actually being like, but why are we doing it anyways? Because conditions will change, whether that's a pandemic or the economy or several other factors, you won't be able to have that resilience in the same way.
I love that story about really knowing your why, because I think it's just when you know your why, you're able to get up every day no matter what, and it gives you that purpose and energy to push forward past any obstacles that might come your way.
Totally. I always do think that obstacles, that is life. Life is not a linear path. If we're gripping and so tied to the plan, we're going to have clenched fists, so we're not going to be able to open our hand and receive the gifts that are actually there. And that's the same when we talk about failures, which I know is part of this podcast, is really reframing. It's not a failure. Something not going according to plan is not a failure. What is a plan anyways? If the pandemic didn't teach us anything, really it's about to have that resiliency is to see an obstacle or see something not going according to plan as an opportunity. Can I learn from this? If I make a mistake, can I learn from this? That's part of the human experience. The only failure I would say that does exist is if we don't actually step into the opportunity to learn. Then we can get very much in, oh, everything's happening to me, and not realizing we do have conviction and we do have ownership of an autonomy of the path we're driving or the path we're going in.
It would be great if you could give us some examples of potentially where you and your journey as an entrepreneur come across some setbacks and you've had to pivot.
Oh my goodness. There's a few that come to mind. And even this, the idea of pivoting, I'm really grateful. I was working with a great tech team during my discovery phase because we were building a prototype after, and they were just really guiding me through the process. But I'm so happy that they initially recommend you do discovery instead of going straight to build. I was very resistant. And they start at the beginning of discovery, they said, be prepared that a pivot might be on the radar. This isn't very abnormal for a pivot to be part of the process. And I was like, no, I see it. I see the vision. I see it. And the reality is, as I got through the discovery phase and realized that the problem, I know I was so passionate about the problem around toxic culture that I was trying to make a difference with. The product I was building was not going to be solving the problem. There really was a mismatch and I had to face it. And that is courageous to really lift up the hood and look what's under and say, okay, I need to look at this transparently and not let my ego get in the way of saying, sure, let's adjust our course. I would say something I did, again, not a failure, but a learning, was I built my product after doing discovery, and I was given so much reassurance that a partnership was going to come through and I needed their data in order to support our algorithm. I wanted to be respectful and not push too hard. It was a personal relationship. And I was getting to the end of the build and I'm like, we need to plug into your internal comms. Last minute, plug was pulled. All these issues arose. I was so angry and I was angry with them. But actually at the end of the day, I only had to be angry with myself because, and this is again the reminder, there was a learning in it, is that I had a gut feel, I didn't listen to it. And usually, most of the time, there's something in there. When we have an experience that, especially I had emotions that came through me, actually I can put this onto the other, but it's actually really towards myself. And it's okay. I just need to learn from this, not to bypass that little whisper that's telling me a message that I'm not listening to, I'm not honoring, because I'm too in my head about, oh, is this appropriate? I don't want to push too hard. I want to be nice. I understand they're busy. I knew I had a gut feel, and that was where the anger was. It wasn't at the other person for the deal falling apart. It was that I could have known this months before if I had actually just pushed a little bit harder and I then could have pivoted to find someone else. Turns out it's all okay because the way the business has unfolded, I do believe, not from a spiritual bypassing lens, but I really do believe that everything happens for some divine reason. Again, if we're able to really surrender and see blocks and challenges and what some might look at as regrets or failures and really see them as opportunities, being, okay, what is this here to teach me? Really, there's always going to be something that is in there. And you might not be able to access that for a couple weeks or even months, but there will be something out of it as long as you shift mindset out of victim of this is happening to me, but rather this is happening for me. So can I rise up to it and actually have some learning out of it?
I think it's so difficult sometimes to break down that ego and start looking at yourself because we don't want to take responsibility So there's a part of us that wants to be, no, it's the world around me. It's everybody else and not me. I think in the working context or any area aspect of our life, it's very difficult to say that this responsibility or accountability lies with me. Do you think that if there's anybody in this situation, potentially it is finding it difficult to move these sort of layers of ego to reflect internally, where would you suggest they begin?
There tends to be some discrepancy or variation on how people refer to the ego. And for me, the ego is the thinking mind, the fear-based mind. I very much read Eckhart Tolle's work. And I do see that most of the structures in our economy and capitalism in our work environments are very masculine, right? There's actually an amazing book called Shakti Leadership. It's all about embracing both energies, feminine and masculine. As we all know, that has nothing to do with gender. We have each of those within us, but how we can bring more of the feminine energy into work and into leadership specifically. I would recommend, because so much of our work environments are so hyper-masculine, and the masculine is also up here, it's the mind, and the feminine is that root chakra, that base chakra, and this, more of the stillness, whereas our working world is very fast, it's very logic, it's very heady. Anything that's going to support you in connecting to that balance of energies, going for a walk around trees, moving your body, not just running on a treadmill, but maybe it's yoga, or maybe it's just really walking. Instead of listening to a podcast, listen to some music. Try singing. Or there's so many things. Just think about where are those moments where kind of time stands still. And often nature or even animals, these are things that can help connect us to presence and finding just a little bit of time in each of our days to find some presence with ourselves. And whether that is 10 minutes before you start your work day, you walk around the block, not making a phone call or listening to a podcast. Maybe you leave your phone at home, or just sitting with ourselves. I don't think it's so uncomfortable. We've created such an on-the-go culture that we really have forgotten the art of sitting with self. And that is where all of my best ideas have come. I can tell you this much. All of my best ideas, whether it has been a visual that I've seen something, my UX design came from sitting in meditation, or nothing happened by me looking at a spreadsheet or reading my email inbox. That was never, has never been a place where I have innovated. My innovation has come in meditation, walking not on my phone looking down, but actually whether it's walking in a new place. I've gotten in the habit now of trying to walk different paths to the same place. So if I always get my coffee, I will try to take a new route, a new street, just go a bit off course to look at the houses that I've never seen. Keeping my head up and my eyes open is where I might find my next little bit of inspiration. Cultivating a sense of presence, which is so much easier said than done. Obviously, I know that not everyone feels it's accessible, but it can start with the first day, 1 minute of stillness, of silence, then the next day, 2 minutes, then maybe it's five. I was doing my meditation teacher training and I was doing 27 minutes every day. It was a very specific number. And I remember my therapist saying, it's not the 27 minutes that is the practice. It is the 23 hours and 33 minutes that is the real practice. I remember being, oh, right. It's around what I do in the outside world. That one day it might be meditation, but I have a recipe in my notes section of my phone of different things that I know help me connect to myself. One might be listening to music and dancing in my room when no one's at home. One might be going for a walk, going to Hampstead Heath, being in nature. One might be my favorite yoga studio or whatever it might be, but I have a recipe list knowing that it's not one size fits all. Every day you need the same thing. We go through cycles and we need different things at different times of the month, and being able to tune and be like, what do I really feel I need today? Sometimes it's a bath. It could be a variety of different things, but just finding that little bit of pause into our very busy days and our social lives and our work lives that are very outward focused. How can we find a little bit of quiet?
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Okay. It did remind me of being in nature. I find this very humbling when you look at how complex everything is or how vast the universe is. It reminds me that I'm not the controller. That sense of being very humbled reminds me that I'm not perfect. I'm just very minute and I could make mistakes or make wrong decisions.
Yeah. I also think about the trees as we're walking, and I think about how old it is, and often, especially at Hampstead Heath, I think about horses running through there at the beginning of the century. I often think, though, about how they're so resilient and how it's not about what we see, it's actually about what we don't see. This feminine and masculine, the roots in the earth, we don't see those, but that's actually what creates stability, so that when a big gust of wind comes through, it doesn't just completely blow over. And it's, you said it's a real humble reminder of, it's not also the obvious, but these things that ground us and root us and anchor us are what will keep us from falling right over and allow us to move when the things doesn't go according to plan and come right back and adapt. And yeah, there's something really wise about nature that we can all learn from.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your decision in becoming an entrepreneur. In the beginning, did you see yourself as an entrepreneur? Was this, I want to become an entrepreneur and then try and figure out what to do? Or is this something that you've had to grow into?
Some really formative words from my father was, when I was 19 or 20, I had struggled with my mental health at school. And I remember my dad saying to me, because I was leaving school early, so I didn't finish my undergraduate degree. I remember my dad, who had a grade 9 education, so he was 14 when he was taken out of school to do an apprenticeship. He ended up building a business himself, but he always said, don't let failure define you. In a lot of ways, I think in some ways, initially, my drive and hunger and my professional path was very much in opposition to almost prove that I wouldn't be defined. And actually, that wasn't necessarily the most healthy thing either, because anytime you're proving something, there's a disconnect from yourself. I knew that I was in the driver's seat. I was, okay, my bachelor degree diploma is not going to be getting me in the door anywhere. So it's the coffees that I ask. And I had so much courage because I just felt like I had nothing to lose. I'm like, the worst they can say is no. But that being said, my father had a path that was very unconventional. It's not like my dad expected me and my sister to become lawyers and he was a doctor. He had a very unconventional path, and my mom was an artist. My sister's now an artist and I followed that path of entrepreneurship. But I, yeah, really, there was a piece there around not letting the failure of dropping out of school be the defining moment of who I am. And the irony is I ended up getting my master's degree down the road. Really, it goes to show how we frame things. It makes all the world of difference. He was an entrepreneur. My grandpa was, his father, and actually my great-grandmother, which back in the day was quite extraordinary for a woman to be in business. So I think there's something in there of, you know, I'm diagnosed ADD. I think working in a corporate setting probably wouldn't be the best for me. I did have some really great career moments along the way, but I always intuitively knew. I think also having this part of my life that was so nourished and nurtured around my creativity, that I was courageous to have ideas and then actualize them. I think creativity is such a key part of entrepreneurship. I think that is my number one role, is leading and cultivating creativity within my company, allowing others to ideate as well, giving them the space to ideate. That's the thing I love most, is, again, but you have to create that space in order to ideate, because yes, I might have some ideas in a boardroom, in a strategy session, but most of my great ideas are actually coming nowhere near a work environment. So being able to know that's also work as well. So what we frame as work, we're often so hard on ourselves saying, oh, I need to be working in this also idea that work needs to be really hard, that actually when we're doing something that we are good at and we love and we feel like we're contributing through, it really doesn't feel like work. We just need to, again, create more time and space to connect to ourselves, connect to what do we love to do, noticing what we don't love to do. But you can only really have those moments of reflection when there's enough space to even have that inquiry.
I was actually recently researching this idea of bringing play into work.
Yes.
Some research has been done around how creativity or the best innovation happens when people are relaxed. So often at work, we're just so tense and stressed and you're trying to solve problems. And it's completely the opposite of what you need to solve hard problems. Is that you need to be really relaxed to be able to do that.
Totally. And I see that. So I think it's so important when we feel stuck, get yourself out of the seat, move away from your workstation. Even if it means going into the washroom, if you're in a corporate setting, and going into a bathroom stall and shaking your body and in a way that just allows the energy to shift and move. I used to do this thing in our co-working space where every day at 3 o'clock, because we had a studio or we have a studio where we do classes, every day we would play a song, one song. So most it's going to be is 6 minutes, maybe 3 to 6 minutes. We would play a song and it was an open invite. Anyone who was a co-working member could join. There was no pressure, but our team would usually always be there. We would play a song and we would dance. And it's not like everyone in their offices could see us doing this. So it was a spot that had some privacy to it, but it was really about, hey, we're in this together. Well, everyone walked out of it laughing, smiling, and anyone who wasn't there wanted to be there based on how people were feeling when they walked out of it. Of course, that's a very unconventional setting. It's a co-working space that's built upon a holistic well-being mandate. So not every office is going to feel that way. But how can you find little experiences that to weave into your day-to-day? Putting on headphones and music usually does it for most people. Moving your body with it, that's the key part.
Fantastic. Some great tips there.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little bit about the execution part. So that's going from an idea state into reality.
Yes.
I've heard a lot about what sets entrepreneurs apart. The key thing might be the execution. Some people are just great at executing. Any tips around how to make sure that you execute your ideas?
I think as women specifically, I identify with this and very much in my early years had this as a struggle. And it was having someone external who was my dad who just said, Christina, if you're trying to strive for perfection, you're never going to put this out into the world. And I do think that having an external support, whether it's one key accountability buddy or it's a mentor or it's a group, having some accountability that really pushes you into putting it into the outside world. Because I think as women, we often have this perfectionism complex because of society and all of our conditioning, that to really put ourselves out there, we really want to be so sure. But there's never the perfect and there's never the absolute right timing or the right, you know, that it's just right. Knowing that also a business I like to think of as an organism, and it changes shape with time. So also that's another thing that was a big learning for me, is that launching a business, it's not the static thing that everything needs to be perfect and the website and the photography and this and that. It's the whole process of running a business is that it's fluid. It's a continuum. And so the belief that it has to be this perfect thing that I need to birth into the world, it's quite nuts. And I actually do think it's why so many of us we're behind closed doors perfecting this thing while no one is seeing it. And that was one of my biggest learnings from launching Work Lab in 2015, 2016. I remember leading up to launch, I didn't post a single thing on Instagram because I didn't want anyone to see it until it was just ready. Because I wanted it to be perfect and I wanted it to look exactly how I saw it in my mind. That hurt me for the first few months because that was all marketing time I could have been doing leading up, getting people ready for the launch of it. But then I had to start building awareness once I started day one paying my bills. I mean, I was paying my bills long before we opened on day one, but I had an opportunity to really start generating revenue. And I had to then take so much more time to build that up. Honestly, I look back and even when I did launch it, it was really my dad pushing me, being, just get it out there. Who cares? The same thing happened with Aster as well, where it's really, especially as a solo entrepreneur, not having a partner in it, you can really, entrepreneurship is incredibly confronting. It's incredibly confronting. And it is going to show you all of your unhealed stuff, all of the stuff from childhood, your relationship to productivity, all of that. And I think it's also an opportunity to rewrite the script. But having some external support that actually will be really part of that relationship is a commitment to transparency and being absolutely compassionately honest is really important.
For the solo entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah.
Because I do find that often with entrepreneurship, it's not like you have people in your circle that are doing the same thing, potentially.
That's a really,
you
know, hard. Like, yeah. I would say that was a huge game changer for me. Luckily, owning a co-working space, I met a lot of entrepreneurs and founders because they were working in the same office as me. So that really helped. But I would say that my friendships really changed once I started a business. And of course, the really important ones stuck through. But I realized when I was working crazy hours, I was so passionate about what I was doing. And then I would go and meet up with a friend, and maybe they're drinking wine and they're talking about someone or something that just felt totally out of alignment. I had such minimal capacity. So to then feel like I was drained by spending time in those friendships, I just, with time, things started to shift. Again, I was in my late 20s. You're still figuring your stuff out and figuring out who you are. But I would say that the friendships that are nearest and dearest to me, most of them are all founders. And that's happened just with time. It's not like this founders club, but it's a path that, especially as a woman, where the systems aren't really there to support you, it's really incredible to not feel like you're walking the path on your own, but you're not alone. So just being able to have others can relate, who can be there, who can give their feedback, who can just get it. As far as communities, I'm courageous now in if I meet someone, I connect with them, even in a very social setting where it was just small talk, but I find out that they are working on a business and I'm okay, let's exchange numbers and let's go for a coffee next week. And actually being able to just in that same way, be courageous in those friendships.
Yeah, I do think that there's a mindset that you need to be around. Because what I find is that I want to tell people about what's going on, but that often what I hear back is totally not what I need. I suppose because they don't understand.
Yeah, everyone's coming from their own, they're projecting their own reality. So oftentimes I'll hear parents' generations, they're putting their own stuff, their own scarcity and their own beliefs into the advice they're giving you. And you're also maybe not asking for advice, but you're getting unsolicited advice. I remember even starting my first business, I remember someone who I really respect, who's a dear family friend, had said, this is never going to work. This model of it's essentially the entire co-working model isn't going to work because at this point WeWork wasn't even in Vancouver. Here we are still 8 years going. And yet if I listened to that individual, I probably wouldn't have started the business because I thought it was crazy. You just have to really trust your intuition, but also you want to always have data to back that up, have numbers back it up. But really, your intuition is your superpower. And I think we don't have enough learning and training on how to connect to it because most of our upbringing and conditioning has been about disconnecting from it and doing as the outside world tells us to. And being outwardly focused and actually coming back home to ourselves is the most revolutionary act we can do.
On the topic of being around other founders, Has there ever been a time where you've experienced a sort of your own mindset being challenged by other entrepreneurs, which have challenged you to reflect on yourself and grow?
One of my best friends is a founder, and I definitely support her when it comes to people and leadership and communication. I know that that's really where I support her on her journey. And when it comes to me, what she does for me is being bold in my asks and being clear and being more accounting focused or finance focused and looking at the revenue models. I'm so grateful having those complementary skills. If we worked in a company, we wouldn't be taking the same role at all. But having those people with different industries, I think that's also a really important thing, is you're not just having a bunch of people. Say you're in the retail space and you've got a startup. You're not just having your advisor friends being people from retail. I think it's super important to get people from different industries. That is where I think the great innovation comes. And yeah, all of my friends are from across the board, different industries for sure. And of course, diversity can be an array of different things, but any kind of diversity supports innovation, I think.
I think that as an entrepreneur, there are so much things that you have to learn. Just from, say, for example, me setting up SheFounds, I come from a product management background. So I was, okay, so I've got to understand the problem. I've got to interview. I knew how to go through the process. I need to know my why, what problem I'm solving, validate it. But what I didn't have was sales marketing skills or any kind of accounting skills.
And that's the stretch, is we'll end up doing the thing we know how to do and we can do it really well. Often I would find that I'd be doing my monthly bookkeeping. All of a sudden I'd be distracted from my bookkeeping doing the thing that I know how to do, because I'm almost getting a dopamine hit because, this makes me uncomfortable. So I'm going to do the thing that I know how to do. I have confidence in it. I feel good doing it. I can do it with my eyes closed. As an entrepreneur, you have to wear all your different hats, and you're only, yes, of course, you want to leverage those and you want to ensure you build that up. For the first few years of my business, I completely skewed into focusing the thing that I love and being, okay, as long as I break even and I don't need to worry. So I had a number in mind of what my break even point was. And then I wasn't thinking about numbers, which was just such a shame, because I started, as soon as I got that, I was giving things away for free. I was doing collaborations and events, not charging for them, because I just wanted to be so focused on people and community and our mission. The reality is it's still an operational business. It's private. If it's profitable, we get to reinvest that money. There's so much, again, deep programming for women around finances and wealth. Either it can be a huge driver, and usually that can come from a traumatic place and scarcity and being so laser focused on it, but a healthy relationship to resources and capital, we just are so disenfranchised in our system. So it's a really funny one to then be an owner of a private business and have a healthy relationship to profit and be really even keeled in achieving those targets. I would definitely say that if you've got any money stuff, there is no doubt in my mind it will show up for you in owning your own business. But again, that's an opportunity for you instead of shying away from it. If something makes you uncomfortable, I always think, okay, can I lean into this a little bit more? What might be there? Do I need to explore this with outside support, or where is this really coming from?
I definitely resonate with the finance part and shying away from it completely. I think for me, it was something that I expected somebody else to be doing. Like my dad would take care of all my finances and accounting stuff, even as a kid. It's that I'm sort of giving that power away to somebody. So then to take it back and own it.
Yeah, totally.
A shift.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's something really empowering once we do lean in to that uncomfortable, wait, I can do this. And actually, I feel really liberated in doing it once I do it once.
We're almost coming up to an hour. For those that are listening today, if they are experiencing a setback, what one tip would you give to help them overcome?
I love my favorite quote, which is, through discomfort comes growth. If everything's going smoothly, we're not learning. And life is about many reiterations of ourselves it is a journey. We don't arrive somewhere. And so try to be firstly compassionate with yourself, but also curious, being, what's this here to show me? And allow that lesson to come through. It's not, maybe it won't come right away, but there's always something for us to learn out of any of these setbacks and obstacles, for sure.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much for having me today, and I'm here to support in whatever way I can.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful having you and hearing about your journey and your experiences. If you've enjoyed listening to today's episode, please do subscribe to our channel, and also feel free to share this podcast with others that would also benefit from listening.